Taylor Decker's on my all 22 fantasy team. Stop. They don't care.
So the strategic component to this game is through the roof.
Your predictions, right? Your forecasting in fantasy football into how good is this player?
This is going to, it's going to change the industry.
Yeah. I moved to the old town where it goes down. Look at me now. I wrote my goals down. I hold it down. Made myself proud. Say, look at me now.
What's up, everyone? Welcome into the All 22 NFL podcast, the official podcast of the All 22 fantasy football platform. It's the only fantasy football game with full 53-man rosters, including offensive linemen, where you get to choose personnel packages and have access to PFF grading and advanced stats to make decisions each week. To learn more and sign up, go to all-22.com, go to the app store and pick up the app today. Ray, man, Thanksgiving's tomorrow. It smells like football outside. It's getting cold in New York over here. How are you?
I am fantastic. It's the best week of the year. It's the best week of the year. We play a little football before the football is on the TV, and then we get to watch some football, then we get to eat a lot, and then we get to spend the weekend watching more football, college and pro. It's the best. We're coming into playoff time in all 22 and all platforms out there, so it really is crunch time. The decisions you make really matter, or if you're already out of it, we could talk some draft. So again, there's always something to look forward to, but especially this time of year, now that, again, playoffs are on the horizon, but some of these top draft prospects have also taken some focus and emerged. So no matter where you are on the spectrum, you fit. There's something for you in the world, the worldwide universe of football. So I'm super excited, man. I'm having a blast.
That is awesome. I just had the dog come in. Sorry if there's some noise. But yeah, it's turkey, it's stuffing, it's gravy, it's all the fixings. So excited to eat that food. Maybe play a little football in the morning as well, right? But yeah, and in the NFL, it really is the best time because you're either good and you're excited about the playoffs, you're in the middle and you're hoping you make the playoffs and like become the Cinderella story, or you're bad and you're getting really excited about draft prospects because there are some really exciting ones in this draft. And in the fantasy football world, obviously running backs are cool. And there's some really good running backs in this draft. So a lot to be excited for. We just had some breaking news. It just popped up on my phone right before we jumped on, Ray. I didn't say anything to you because I wanted a live reaction. Daniel Jones signed with the Minnesota Vikings.
Why? I guess he's a fine backup. Yeah, he's a fine backup. Okay. Good for him. He landed on his feet. He wanted to go to a playoff contender, right? They're a playoff contender. He's not a threat to Sam Darnold, who we've said for years is a viable NFL quarterback and has now proven as such. Yeah, good for Daniel Jones. Good for him. He deserves it, I think. So good for him. I'm excited. Good signing. Makes sense.
Yeah, I feel like it's all around good. And we talked about Daniel Jones being, you know, he had a rough go of it in New York with the Giants, but that team just continuously kind of set him up in these weird situations where there wasn't an offensive line. And this year, when they finally have an offensive line, it seems like everything else kind of fell apart around him. But it's also on him as well, right? Like there wasn't this development. It wasn't continuous. There were some really great moments in time and there were some really bad moments in time. And it's something about New York, right? Like Mark Sanchez had the butt fumble. Daniel Jones had the run where he just like got snipered like before he could score. Like there's going to be these memorable moments for these quarterbacks in New York where we just will never forget these weird plays, right? And it really is weird the way these things kind of develop. But Daniel Jones, I think, is talented, right? And is he a good NFL backup? Yeah, I think he's like a fantastic NFL backup. If that is your backup, you're in one of the best situations in football. But I think he can be a spot starter for a team. And, you know, we saw, again, we talked about Geno Smith. We talked about Sam Darnold, Justin Fields this year, Russell Wilson. I think Daniel Jones has an opportunity to go to another team, get another opportunity, maybe not this year, maybe not next year, but maybe 2 years from now when he's had time to really just like get his, you know, breath back from being with the Giants. And maybe he ends up being a decent NFL starter. I would have loved to have seen him in, LA with the Rams and McVay, because we saw what that did to Baker. But I think this is just as good as a situation. What the Vikings have done with the talent that they've had just shows how fantastic that coaching is. And I think if you could have asked for anything for Daniel Jones, it's that he would go to a team with great coaching for him to just sit back and learn, right? In a professional environment where he can develop some of those skills about leadership, about just, you know, running an offense. I think he's going to be able to do that in Minnesota. this might just be a six-game thing for him, right, in Minnesota, but it is a step in the right direction. It doesn't mean he's there next year, I don't think. I don't think it was a longer than just a six-month contract, but still, I like it a lot for Daniel Jones. I like it a lot for the Vikings as well, because again, if God forbid something to happen to Sam Darnold, he's a viable starter for them.
I mean, the Rams scenario could still happen. We don't know what's going to happen with Matthew Stafford, and the Rams aren't necessarily going to be drafting high enough to get a quarterback. Not that this class is overly strong at that position anyhow, at least early on, from what we can tell. So similar to how Baker Mayfield had his short stint in LA, which kind of springboarded him to Tampa Bay, and then now you see him as a top 15 quarterback in the league, the path could still be there for Daniel Jones to have that sort of reclamation path for his career. He's still in what, his mid-20s, so, you know, maybe late 20s. So the path is still there. I would not, I mean, I think we both are, or at least me in particular, especially when it comes to Sam Darnold, but I think for someone like Baker Mayfield, we were both kind of steadfast in our belief that the ability was there and he can be a viable, good starting quarterback in the NFL for years. You know, he just needed to sort of get right and have Humpty Dumpty get put back together again. I'm not as steadfast in my belief that that will happen for Daniel Jones, but the opportunity and the path is there if things fall the right way for him to at least have a shot to do that. And I do think the same cast of characters, right? The Rams might be a part of that, depending on how the timing and everything works out with Matthew Stafford and where they end up when it comes to the draft and so forth. He may end up a viable option for a team like that. I would much prefer that than him being a bridge for the Raiders or something to that effect. So the landing spot matters. We've talked about it. Landing spot always matters when it comes to quarterbacks, not just young rookie quarterbacks, but, you know, reclamation projects as well. That landing spot is key. Not everybody can be Drake May and actually look really good in a very bad situation right off the bat and surprise people like that. Sometimes people need that little TLC to get on the right track in order to sort of rebound and revive their career. So yeah, good first start for Daniel Jones, right? You know, going to a good team, a contender, you're not the starter. But you know, you're in a good organization. You can kind of get some R&R and then see what happens here in the offseason when it comes to sort of the long-term view of your career moving forward. So yeah, good signing all around. Nice pre-Thanksgiving Day little appetizer there.
Yeah, and it is an interesting move for the Giants, right? Because the Giants cut Daniel Jones before the end of his contract. I think he asked for his release, but they decided to bench him, which is why he asked for it. You know, the situation there with Tommy DeVito, Drew Locke, they're not starting Locke, who was supposed to be the backup. They paid good money to have a solid backup. They're not playing him. So it's with Tommy DeVito. Game one looked really bad, and it wasn't really his fault. He got hit sometimes harder than I've seen a quarterback get hit in a very long time. It looked like I was watching like the old NFL hits tape. That's how bad he was getting smashed. Now the Giants are expecting to have a top five pick, I think, right? Like that's kind of why they make a move like this, is to have a top five pick. But we've talked about how this quarterback class, there really isn't a definite thing there. This group of coaches in New York, they like that running style quarterback. I think, you know, Jalen Milroe fits that mold. You know, a lot of the other quarterbacks have some athleticism to them as well, but there really is no sure thing. I don't know if you're going to have one of these quarterbacks come and step in and just be outstanding. And we talk about, this year we've talked about it probably more than any year, how the developmental quarterbacks taking time to learn behind a starter does wonders for them. And we're seeing that so much this year. So why are the Giants, you know, when everybody's kind of zigging back to let the guy sit and wait, they're saying, nope, we're just going to start him, right? We're just going to draft guy top five and pray that he's the savior. It reeks of desperation. It doesn't smell good. And it also is unfortunate for whatever quarterback they draft, because that pressure in New York is immense.
Yeah, but they have no choice. They can't wait another year. They can't have a bridge year or bridge quarterback for a year, because that staff, that front office probably won't be there to see to see beyond that. So they have no choice. They have to go ahead and get a rookie quarterback. It's been too long. and they're going to have to roll the dice. And it's a dicey quarterback class to do that with, to be totally honest. And they're still not in a stable enough situation as far as the roster is concerned, strength-wise, to support a young quarterback learning on the fly. So they are swimming upstream. It's going to be very tough, but they've left themselves with no other choice. And that's just kind of what happens when you miss on 75% of your first round picks in the last decade. That's going to happen. You're in a bad spot, and now you're going to be desperate. You're going to take a quarterback, and he's going to have to make earmuffs chicken salad out of chicken shit. It just is what it is at this point. So best of luck to them. I do think, Brian Daboll is a good coach, despite the frustrations of the warranted frustrations of a prominent skill player over there in New York. I'm not sure it's going to work out for them, to be honest. It's still a long-term fix after all these years. It was just the messiest situation we've seen in a very long time, which is why Saquon Barkley is having an all-time season in a good situation with Philadelphia. It just goes to show you what he was being held back by when he was in New York. So, yeah.
It's going to be a fun episode when we do like the how to fix the Giants, because I think we do it every year now, and it's like
and they don't do what we say. Yeah.
No,
yeah.
They don't do what we say. But on top of that, it's like their payroll is atrocious every year. Because they try to fix the problem with these like massive signings, and they give players money that probably shouldn't, and then it just perpetuates the issue. But okay, Thanksgiving is upon us, right? We're at Thanksgiving time. We have some very cheeky little, fun reviews that we're gonna do for the games. So we have Bears Lions, we have Giants Cowboys and Dolphins Packers. Three awesome games coming up this Thanksgiving tomorrow. So we're going to have a little fun here, Ray. So the first topic we're going to do is each game, we're going to pick our gravy train. So gravy train, meaning a player or a couple players that you think are going to absolutely feast on Thanksgiving. We're also going to pick a wishbone. Okay. A wishbone being, what are some guys or a guy that you think has a long shot, but that you're really banking on having the game of his life to help you win this matchup? So gravy train, wishbone, let's start Bears Lions. Bears going into this game, have looked a lot better. That team is starting to come together. The Lions are destroying every opponent they face at this point. It's pretty interesting matchup, right? It's like this juggernaut Lions team versus this up and coming Bears team where Caleb Williams is finally getting his footing and looks fantastic. And I say getting his footing, but that jump pass was pretty incredible last weekend. It's like an all-time highlight. But the guy that I had for the gravy train in this matchup is actually the other quarterback. It's Jared Goff. Jared Goff has been playing some fantastic football. And the Bears secondary, while it has a couple guys that have been playing well, I mean, Jalen Johnson has been the best corner in football over the last couple of years. Jared Goff should have a great day. The linebackers in Edmonds and Edwards are 50th and 68th at their respective positions, 61.9 season grade, 55.6 season grade, respectively for them. And we know that Jared Goff likes to pick on the intermediate level of the field. He is fantastic at that. But even if he decides to go outside or if he decides to go long, Tyrique Stevenson, the corner opposite Johnson, 86th out of 110 eligible corners in terms of PFF grading, 55.8 on the season. Jared Goff eats on people like this, right? Like these are the games that he does really, really well. He's going to be in the limelight Thanksgiving morning. I have Jared Goff being my gravy train feasting player of the game, Lions, Bears.
So I think the passing game is going to end up being a theme of this matchup then, because you touched on it at the beginning there. So if I flip the coin around, Caleb Williams, you mentioned him, is coming off of his third best outing grade-wise of the season last week, right? Posted a 7.2 yards per attempt number against Minnesota on 47 attempts. Okay, but the key metric to look at here is he had an average time to throw of 2.57 seconds. That's nearly a half second lower than his season average time to throw of 2.95. Now, if we rewind a little bit, from weeks 5 to 9, there was a bye week in there, but for 4 straight games, he posted an average time to throw above 3 seconds, with 3 of them coming above 3.4 seconds when it came to time to throw for the game. So that is an incredibly long time. Ideally, you want to be around 2.5, 2.4. He was at 3.4, above 3.4 for three of those four games. However, in the last three games, all of his average time to throw metrics were under 3 seconds and has gotten lower each and every week. So what does that mean? That means Caleb is actually getting more comfortable playing within the structure of an offense and actually playing with rhythm and timing, as opposed to the hero ball that made all the highlight tweets and reels when he was coming into the league from his time at USC. He's actually playing quarterback within the structure of the Bears offense, whatever that looks like now that they've gotten rid of their offensive coordinator, thankfully. So he's getting more comfortable playing quarterback. What does that mean? That means good things for DJ Moore and Keenan Allen in particular, given that the Lions are now suffering from some injuries and are really just pulling guys wherever they can find them, from wherever they can find them, to play cornerback, whether it's Kendall Vildor, Amik Robertson, to just go in there and just kind of hold serve Khalil Dorsey. It's kind of a mess right now in Detroit at cornerback. So they're very thin there. And so DJ Moore and Keenan Allen in particular, I think, are poised to now have big games. Keenan Allen, we know about the route running and just the separation at the top of routes. DJ Moore, just all around threat from the screen game on to deep downfield throws. He could do it all. So he's going to stress them at all levels of the defense. And I anticipate this to be, you know, a pretty high scoring game, or at least yardage wise for both teams to move the ball through the air, because you kind of touched on it there with Jared Goff and when the Lions are on offense. But Caleb Williams is progressing and playing better. And given the depth issues currently at cornerback for the Lions, I think guys like DJ Moore and Keenan Allen in particular are going to have big days through the air. So, yeah, with that, I think it makes for an entertaining matchup, but I'm really looking at those two receivers in particular for Chicago.
We both talked about the passing game, which is funny because it's going to end up being each team has like 200 rushing yards, because that's always what happens, right? We zig, they zag, whatever. Who is your wishbone player of this game?
So I'm going to look at Dan Skipper. Okay, so Dan Skipper, typically the reserve lineman, number 70 for the Lions, who was made famous initially for the whole lining up as an eligible receiver referee fiasco late in the year against Dallas last season. And then in their revenge game, Detroit pretty much lined him up like way out wide at wide receiver against the Cowboys earlier this season as they just trounced them. So, Dan Campbell was trying to make a point there. But in any event, Dan Skipper now with perhaps a Taylor Decker injury here. Dan Skipper gets to start at Thanksgiving, probably worrying a lot of Detroit fans here. But, I would like to see him elevate his game from sixth man or sixth lineman eligible on the field for goal line situations to actually show something here and see if, he could hold up on the national stage on Thanksgiving. We'll see how much he lines up against Montez Sweat and if that makes a difference, but I'm rooting for the guy. Why not? He became known for all the wrong reasons last year. And now I'd like to see him do well on Thanksgiving in front of the whole country.
I would love that. And you went really deep into your wishbone. I didn't go nearly as deep. Mine is very surface level, but I had Cole Kmet, who is somebody that you probably don't want to like risk your game on. 67.8 season grade. And he's going against probably the best safety duo currently in the NFL with Brian Branch, Kirby Joseph. They are grading 88.1, 91.3. But the reason I like this matchup so much for Cole Kmet and why I am willing to take the risk on it, right, even though playing the best safeties in the NFL, is they're both smaller guys. I think they're both around 6 feet tall, 200 pounds. Cole Kmet is 6'6", 260, right? And if you remember, right, when like Gronk was crushing it, even Kelsey, a lot of times teams within those divisions would draft safeties that were these bigger safeties so that they had somebody to match up on these bigger tight ends. Kmet is a bigger tight end, and he is potentially going to be a great option for Caleb Williams in this game. And even if he's not as a receiving prospect in this game, how about him and his blocking, right? He is also a fantastic blocker. I really like what he's able to do. 66.8 grade as a blocker in the pass game this year is solid for a tight end. It's I think it's top four in the, you know, in the NFL right now out of the top 10 receiving guys. So it is promising for him and his prospects. Cole Kmet is somebody I'm going to take the risk on and start in this game.
Okay. Going mainstream there. That's cool. That's fine. What's yeah. So I went deep with Dan Skipper as my wishbone, but that was my only Thanksgiving wishbone. So,
oh, that was it. All right. You're done.
That was it
for all the
games.
That was it. Okay.
I went deep.
You did. You went insanely deep. Let's go to the Giants and Cowboys game though. Okay. This game is an interesting matchup because both teams right now are really doing a poor job of playing NFL football. They both look honestly embarrassing at times. But the Cowboys were expected to be a top maybe five team in the NFL this year. I think it's debatable that they would be in that range. Obviously, Dak gets hurt. But even when he was healthy, the team was underperforming, and it really started with the offensive line. Tyler Guyton, being a rookie, playing a really difficult position. We said he was a raw prospect from the beginning, but he has struggled this year, 51.2 season grade. And he's going against Brian Burns, who as of late has absolutely feasted, 81.3 grade. He is my gravy train pick for the Giants and Cowboys game. Like I said, he's been fantastic. I think that matchup in particular is ecstatic. He's going to absolutely destroy, but he's going to have times where he's stunting against Brock Hoffman and Cooper Beebe and those guys as well. Although we like Cooper Beebe, he's still a rookie. He still struggles at times. They're both low 60s grading players. I just expect Burns to have a field day. We know Dexter Lawrence is going to have a field day, but I think Burns in this matchup, especially where before maybe he was a borderline start for you, he's gravy train. It's gravy train time for Brian Burns.
So I'm glad I wrote down two names because Brian Burns just won for most of the reasons you listed there. I will just add to it. And remember, guys, this is not First Take or whatever it's called nowadays. We don't exchange notes and have preconceived talking points. We observe what the matchups are and make our own decisions and then talk about it. So this will happen sometimes. But I will add to the Brian Burns thing as well is at left tackle, the Dallas Cowboys are also rotating in Asim Richards, who was a mid-round pick 2 years ago from North Carolina. So they're rotating at left tackle, which that's also never good either. You want something solid, especially at the left tackle spot. But they're rotating in two young players. Asim Richards has actually been okay. Didn't give a pressure or a hurry or a hit in 14 pass blocking snaps against the Commanders last week. But he has not shown himself to be ready for someone like Brian Burns full time. If you know, whether it's a rotation or what have you on Thanksgiving, that's a matchup you smash all day. It's not just Tyler Guyton. It's actually a rotation, which probably makes it tougher on both Guyton and Richards at left tackle. So yeah, by all means, Brian Burns has a superb matchup this week. You touched on Dexter Lawrence. Zach Martin likely out again. So backup guard, perhaps Brock Hoffman at right guard played last week against the Commanders. So if that's the case again, it's just Dexter Lawrence was already a no-brainer as far as starting every single week and being your DI1. So it doesn't change anything other than it really tips the scales further in Lawrence's direction than it otherwise already was. However, I'm going to go back to this well again. We've talked about this. We've mentioned this name, Mazi Smith. He's been really bad this year. The Cowboys have basically incinerated his first 2 years of development. They drafted him a one technique, 325-pound defensive tackle out of Michigan, a power player with some explosiveness, and decided to have him lose 35 pounds, allegedly, and turn into some sort of penetrating, you know, three tech type of penetrator into the backfield. And that just didn't work. Then he hurt his shoulder and was in rehab all offseason and hasn't been able to sort of really regain his previous form. And now we just have this completely lost year in year two for him in 2024. However, if you look at Mazi Smith's player card, you can see the obvious one great week and great game that he had and probably take a guess as to who that was against. Now he gets to play against the New York Giants yet again, and that soft interior offensive line that they have there. So again, this is his second crack at what was a phenomenal game for him earlier on this season out on the road. Now he's at home against John Michael Schmitz in the interior of that that Giants offensive line. So maybe for the only other time this season, you could maybe start Mozzie Smith as your defensive interior three if you have to. He also had his second best outing of the year against the Commanders this past Sunday, so he's got a little bit of momentum going into the matchup as well. So probably the only time you're ever going to hear his name again for this season in terms of someone who you might want to put into your lineup. If it's going to be any week, it's this one for Mozzie Smith. So yeah, just keep an eye out on that one.
I like that you had a wishbone that you got
that
out.
I made
there,
because
honestly, this one,
my wishbone, yeah,
because that's your wishbone. Because honestly, this matchup did not have great wishbones for me to choose from. I didn't have a good one to say, I'll be honest. Like I said, like Cole Kmet was pretty surface level. You could go surface level here as well and say like Bobby Okereke is a decent matchup in this game just because of how poor the Cowboys run game is. So Okereke might be able to feast a little bit there as your wishbone player. But I think, you know, calling out a player like Mozzie is a great call out, because like you said, he's had one good game this year and it's against this opponent. Let's run it back, man. Let's run it back. Okay. Third game is the Dolphins and Packers. This is the one that I've been really looking forward to talking about, because while the Packers have looked great, I'm a bit concerned as a fan with the injuries on this team and what it's going to mean for this matchup. So the players that I have as gravy train players are the receivers in Miami, and that's Tyreek Hill and Jalen Waddle going against the completely injured and totally disabled Packers DB group in Carrington Valentine and Kristen Nixon with a 52.5 and 60.9 season grade respectively. The Packers have great safety play and they've been doing that, which is hopefully going to be helpful for this matchup. But that type of speed is really difficult to guard when you just don't have decent corner play. And it really makes the field just kind of open up for the opposing team. So I expect this to be a high scoring game. It's also unfortunate for the Packers that their offensive line hasn't been playing well either. So, you know, while we want to have the points kind of rolling on both sides, the Packers are going to have to be playing a bit of catch up. And if they could develop the run game as they did last week, things should be okay. But they don't want to get in a situation where they're just playing catch up the whole game if Hill and Waddle start tearing it up. So Hill and Waddle are my gravy train players. But there are a few guys as well that we can talk about, but let me hear who you got first.
So that's what I wrote down. Actually, I put in my notes here, wanted to talk about this more with you, because that, when you look at this matchup, that jumps out at you right away is the injuries at corner and the general mismatch that jumps off the page right away between Waddle and Hill versus Nixon and Valentine. And yeah, I think Tua maybe starting to get in a groove here. This is the type of game that he can excel in, given that speed on the outside against a weakened unit. But when you expand on that a bit too, given that we know how Miami likes to sort of use that speed and space for the running game to open things up, I mean, at linebacker too, when you expand a bit, Isaiah McDuffie, Quay Walker, who came up on my timeline again on Instagram for that time that he shoved the freaking athletic trainer for the Lions and then got kicked out of the game. Remember that? The linebackers haven't been playing too hot either. Now, Eric Wilson has been okay, but by and large, when you couple the fact that you have some concerns at corner with some shaky play at linebacker right now, and you have to deal with that speed and space and that running game that really stretches you horizontally on top of everything else that they can do vertically and across the field with those receivers, it's going to put a lot of stress on the back end of that defense. And unless Rashawn Gary, pretty much on his own, can take over the line of scrimmage, it's tough for me to see the Dolphins really being slowed down at all on offense, because they seem to have the matchup at all levels here, with the exception of, you know, Rashawn Gary. yeah, it looks like a really tall task for the Packers to slow this offense down. We've seen Xavier McKinney as sort of the turnover king here at safety. He's been our favorite safety this whole season. So I think you're going to have to maybe make a play or two on the back end like that from someone like McKinney to just maybe slow down this offense quite a little bit here and give your offense a chance to keep up if you're the Packers, because just looking at this, it seems like a mismatch in space in favor of the Dolphins when they're on offense.
100%. And I couldn't agree with you more. It's the coaching, though, that, you know, I think has saved the Packers in the last couple of years, right? Like, this is a really young team that has been able to scheme things in a way that just gives them an advantage that on paper just doesn't look to be there. The run game, again, was the investment that they made this offseason and has been paying dividends. I think when you talk about wishbone players, right, and if we get into that part of the segment, it all falls on Josh Myers, in my mind, in this game. And we talked about how he has been a really underperforming player this year, 51.5 grade. He's going against Zach Seiler, who has a 77.9, and Calais Campbell with a 79.7. They both are fantastic against the run. But if we don't get the run game going, we are going to lose this football game, right? And that kind of starts with the center and Josh Myers. So that's definitely the Packers' wishbone. If I was a fantasy owner, I don't think I would bank on that. If I was a gambling man, I'd maybe say, okay, what about Evan Williams, right? And we talked about how the cornerbacks look rough, the linebacker play's been rough, but the safety play's been fantastic. And it's not just McKinney, right? It's Williams as well, who has an 81.5 season grade and has outperformed the higher-picked rookie that was picked with him right this year. So he has done a great job of earning the time that he's gotten on the field, and he's made the most of it. He's going against, you know, he's going to have a lot of matchups against Jonnu Smith, who's been fantastic for the Dolphins. Tua is going to have a field day if he does the right things and if they can scheme it the right way. So I'm even more excited to see how the new defensive coordinator from BC for the Packers, who has done a pretty good job this year, can scheme against really the most explosive offense in the NFL, right? How can they do it? And I think it starts with a guy like Evan Williams.
Yeah, and to help out a bit, right, with the complimentary football, I mean, Jordan Love has the opportunity as well to put up some points here. I mean, I'm not the biggest fan of Storm Duck. Kader Kohu, if I'm saying his name correctly, has been kind of shaky after sort of being a popular name a couple years back when he first came into the league. And you got a deep receiving group over there in Green Bay as well. You have, you know, a lot of weapons there between Watson, if he catches the ball, Reed, Dobbs, etc. You have Josh Jacobs on the ground. What Jordan Love cannot do, right, because I kind of mentioned elsewhere how the Packers perhaps have to have that takeaway on the back end from one of their playmakers there to kind of slow things down a bit for the Dolphins offense when the Packers are on defense. Jordan Love has had that turnover-worthy play, at least one bad turnover-worthy throw every game so far this year. I'm not sure he can afford to get away with that this week against the Dolphins, given, you know, how we expect that offense to perform. So Love has to take care of the ball. I know it's cliche, I've got a turnover battle, wins the game. But Love really does have to avoid some of those throws he's made in previous weeks to stay in this one, because it could get out of hand if it's a 10-3 type of game here, and then Jordan Love has that one throw per week that you really want back, and it gives the Dolphins the ball in scoring territory, that could, you know, make this game sort of turn on its head and, you know, get away from the Packers in a hurry. But if he takes care of the ball, the Packers could also kind of keep pace here on offense, because they do have some matchups through the air as well that are in their favor. But yeah, Love's got to take care of the ball here better than he has in recent weeks, or really all year.
It's going to be a game of efficiency, and it's hard to win that battle against probably the most efficient quarterback in the NFL in Tua, right? Yeah. It's a hard game to play. So to me, it's really, can we get the running game established early? Because we know that they are going to be efficient on the other side. All right. The last thing we wanted to talk about today was some playoff stuff, right? Playoffs are coming up in fantasy football. It's no different in all 22. And another cheeky category, it's stuffing your depth chart, right? Stuffing your depth chart. And it's a question of how does your strategy have to change from regular season to playoffs in the formation of your depth chart? How are you stacking these positions, right? So I would argue that during the regular season, it's fantastic to build depth at quarterback, tackle, defensive interior, edge rusher, because even if you have a good one or two good ones at certain positions, those positions are just so valuable that you want to invest heavily in, say, having three or four quarterbacks as opposed to having two. Having maybe a fifth tackle or a fifth defensive interior or a sixth edge rusher, because they're just so valuable that if you can hit on one, it just makes a huge world of difference. For example, in a league that we're in, I have Nick Bosa and Max Crosby, but I, you know, a few years ago drafted Odafe away and said to myself, like, while he wasn't really performing early, it's like, these are important to carry as extra guys, because if they hit, you're in such an advantageous position, and OA did hit. So I now have three guys that I feel really confident in carrying at the edge position. And that wouldn't have happened if I didn't have that extra depth at the edge position during the regular season. But the playoffs are a lot different, and the way you carry your team is a lot different during that time, because you probably know who your quarterback is, right? So if you were carrying maybe a fourth quarterback, maybe even a third, you might not want to in the playoffs. You might know what those players are, right? If you were holding Daniel Jones and holding out hope that he would become this guy, turn it around, I think at this point in the season, you can drop him, feel comfortable about that, because you need that extra spot in the postseason. Because again, if you're like me, maybe you only carry typically two running backs and maybe you don't invest heavily. So it's a guy like Tyler Algier or Justice Hill, who's not always going to be a slam dunk to get your 20 snap total, right? And you cannot have guys at, you know, at any position in the playoffs that are at risk of not meeting the snap count minimum. So for me, that's typically running back. And while during the regular season, I usually carry two running backs, maybe that's the flip that happens in the playoffs, right? Maybe it's I cut Daniel Jones, I add a more established veteran, maybe Ramondre Stevenson is available, maybe somebody else, right, that is a lower level running back, but you know is going to meet the snap count. Maybe you don't even start him, right? If your Justice Hill doesn't meet that snap count, who's going to grade well? It'll just fall onto that next guy. But you have that depth there, because the worst thing that could happen to you in the playoff is getting a zero at a position, at any position. It doesn't matter if it's kicker or punter. You cannot risk having that zero. The scores are too tight. It's too close. Ray, how do you typically build that depth chart? How do you stuff your depth chart in the playoffs?
So you mentioned the worst thing that could happen, which, yes, is a zero out because of injury or missed snap count because you had too few players at a position that does a lot of time sharing. So I'm going to talk about the second worst thing that could happen to you, which is how I sort of built out, using a real life example, a stuffed depth chart. And it goes back to the matchup theory that I've mentioned here before at linebacker. Take them all, right? But look particularly at their schedules, because I've mentioned it before, it's all about matchups at linebacker. Unless you have Fred Warner, it's pretty much a matchup dependent position. Even with guys like Roquan Smith, or four guys like Roquan Smith, it's a matchup dependent position. And so in the playoffs, what you don't want to have happen is to open up your matchup page and you see two 40s and 50s grades from your linebackers, and now you're behind the eight ball, and that sinks you for that 1 week. You lose by 0.6 points because you just didn't have any good linebackers show up for you in the playoffs. So in simplest terms, take a bunch of them, right? And using a real life example, I'll just go through an example depth chart that I have at linebacker. Devin Lloyd, close to an every week starter. Zaven Collins, Peyton Wilson, Edgerrin Cooper, Patrick Queen. I got to drop his ass. I actually just did. But for the sake of this exercise, you stay with me here. Take a look at the schedules for these linebackers when you get into the playoffs. Who are they going to be playing? And do you have advantageous matchups there? Look at your waiver wire if you need to add some linebackers here. Look at their schedule, because you don't want to pick up a linebacker who's a pretty good player and then they're going up against the Detroit Lions in the championship round of all 22, for example, and you're just sitting there with a starter in an absolute blender praying that he doesn't completely sink your team because he's going up against one of the best offenses in the league. So take a look at one name I mentioned. You have Devin Lloyd there, who we'll get to in a second, but Peyton Wilson, he plays the Cleveland Browns again in 2 weeks. He had a great game in the snow just this past week. 2 weeks again, he's playing the Cleveland Browns. I'm probably going to start him. That is not an offense that's going to really stress the linebackers here, put them in a blender and have him get a terrible week. That's a good matchup for a linebacker. Zaven Collins has the Patriots and Panthers in back-to-back weeks. Those are matchups you like. Yes, I know the Panthers have gotten a bit better and Bryce Young is kind of getting his footing back and everything. It's still the Patriots and the Panthers offenses that we're talking about here. Devin Lloyd, not someone you're going to find on your waiver wire, and is probably someone you were starting anyway for the most part, but again, should be matchup dependent. He's going up against the Titans, the Jets, the Raiders, the Titans again, and then the Colts. I don't believe it. I think that's week 18, so I don't even think we go that far. But Titans, Jets, Raiders, Titans. Guess what, guys? That's about as good as it gets for a linebacker when it comes to the matchups for your entire playoff run right there. That's someone who just became a lock every single week in the playoffs for me. But again, that's important. Linebackers, we wrote the article a few weeks back. You take a look at the case study. Even very good linebackers are completely susceptible to the offensive matchup for a given week, especially if it's a mobile quarterback on the other side of the ball. So you really want to focus on who is their opponent more than anything else. And so with guys like this, for example, Devin Lloyd's going to be a lock, probably playing Peyton Wilson when he goes against the Cleveland Browns. But Zaven Collins also has a fantastic couple weeks there between the Patriots and Panthers. So again, you're going to want to play those matchups here to ensure that you don't have a bottoming out at a position where, yes, it's not as highly valued as some of the premium spots like edge rusher or wide receiver, for example. But it's still enough to really sink you because the lows at linebacker can be very low just based on the nature of the position, and you want to avoid that as best you possibly can.
I don't think Fred Warner has graded over a 65 since Patrick Mahomes juked him into the underworld.
Oh, man, there you go. He broke him. He broke him. That's right. You did mention Warner that. He might have broken him.
He might be broken. So even Fred Warner might not be able to be trusted, but even a 60 at linebackers is not bad. It might be worth, the start, but yeah. Other positions, right? I think again, you probably know what you have at quarterback, tackle, defensive interior and edge. So maybe slim off some of the fat there that you're maybe hanging on to. We'll call them the trimmings, right? Trim it. The running backs, the tight end.
I think it's, we're not there yet.
Shoot. Running back, tight end, linebacker, corner, safety, kicker, punter, you might want to add some depth. And I said kicker, punter, and I mean it. Like, imagine losing a playoff game because your kicker gets hurt before the game and doesn't play, or doesn't get out there and kick that game, right? Like, you don't want a situation like that happening. It will ruin you, right? So definitely add depth at the less valuable positions and just hope for the best. Stuff those depth charts. But everybody, have a great Thanksgiving if we don't hear from you. Please give us a follow at all-22.com. It's where you can sign up. Give us a follow on Twitter, Instagram, Facebook, and TikTok at all22_PFF. And then give us a review wherever you watch and listen to your podcasts. And have a great Thanksgiving.